Let me start off by thanking Dayman on all of our behalves for the way in which she's conducted this research and the report that's been published. I think one of the comments that I've picked up time and time again across the community is the inclusive nature that's underpinned your work, Anne, and also the way in which the work that's been conducted by you and your team is very highly respected by the business, the university, and by government sectors alike. And so on behalf of all of us here this evening, I think we owe you an enormous debt of gratitude as we seek to ensure that that government takes forward some of the recommendations that you've highlighted. Now, as Anne's already highlighted in one of her final slides, she's added 32 recommendations to a list of 297 that were present in the 9 reviews previously. But she's also helped herself and me and my colleagues this evening in constructing our comments around the 6 key messages. And so what I want to do is to spend a few minutes just perhaps responding to those 6 key messages that Anne has outlined so well. There are well-known images in the report that you've got in front of you, and those are what I'm going to refer to. I think there are only 2 points that I'd like to make by way of introduction. The first Anne made right at the very end, and that is that this business-university collaboration builds on world-leading research base that exists in the UK. It's well known how that can be measured. The most normal set of messages are around the 1% of the global population, 4% of the research spend, producing 16% of the highly cited papers. There are other metrics that I'll come on to later on, but that's an extremely effective and efficient base upon which to build. And I think I'd urge government and the new government to make sure that, again, in addressing some of the challenges that Anne's laid out, we don't inadvertently do things that are retrospective with regard to that particular strength. The other point, and it's a point that Anne and I discussed, and there are very good reasons why Anne's report is about business-university research collaborations. But the other point that I feel I should make at the outset is that universities are about education and research. And in terms of addressing and enhancing economic growth, there are certainly key elements of the skills agenda right the way from the apprenticeship schemes that are gaining greater prominence once more, undergraduate, postgraduate education, a Cinderella in recent years, and also the type of customized executive education and professional development space that certainly is a key part of my business and my colleagues' business at Cranfield University. So those are some background comments. So to move to the key messages, and where else can I start but figure 10 in the report that you've got in front of you, innovation system being too complex. I just want to make 3 observations around this, perhaps that aren't necessarily and quite as connected to that diagram and to the text that surrounds it. The first is an observation that I've made on a number of occasions, that the term innovation is not straightforward, and there is a bit of a language issue between what business means by innovation and what universities mean by innovation. And there is a spectrum there. And I think that we need to make sure in the discussions and going forward that we are very clear that it's that grey space that exists in that. The other point is, you've referred to impact. I think it's very important that impactful research, et cetera, very important, and I might make a comment about that in a moment, isn't muddled up with entrepreneurial universities and isn't muddled up with innovation. They are different activities, all part of an agenda that I think universities and their leadership teams are trying and wishing to support, but all very distinctive in their own right. So in terms of this evening, I just wanted to construct my comments very simply around a distinction between research and innovation in that triangular space that exists between government, business, and universities. Those are three key elements that are there to underpin economic development. And in a debate at the Royal Academy of Engineering just a couple of weeks ago, I think we very succinctly summarized it then, that research is using pounds to generate knowledge. Innovation is using that knowledge to generate pounds, and government's there to develop the policy and the reinvest the pounds to create the right environment within which this cycle continues. So, in terms of innovation, I absolutely endorse Anne's comments that innovation, like research, is a long-term issue. And I would like to reinforce her comments, which are basically summarized that consistency in our approach is essential. We've all seen what happens when we form RDAs and we then change RDAs into LEPs and catapults and what have you. It's not helpful. We've got to have a consistent framework within which we can address this agenda. You've referred to it as the innovation framework, and I'm very happy with that terminology. I think we do need to be inclusive around it. It links that in government industrial strategy or framework. It links the various sector-driven growth partnerships. It links to the LEPs, Research Councils UK, Innovate, HEFCE, and other bodies such as the RTOs that are very important in this space. I'd also like to echo Anne's comments around innovation being slightly chaotic in nature. So I think figure 10 doesn't really surprise us. And I suppose the big question for government and Anne's group taking this forward is how much this can really be streamlined in a space where actually the funding units are used effectively and efficiently at the moment in large measure. So let's streamline, yes, but let's also make sure that in that streamlining we address what's broken and not fix what isn't broken. And I think that would be a plea that I'd be making at this point. Second message about people being central. Absolutely, and it was ever thus. I think you reinforce in your report the very close working in many areas between universities and large organizations and corporates. I think there's good reason for that. There are compatibilities in terms of scale, structures, roles, and responsibilities in business and universities. So there's a good set of nodal points to be able to make the important interactions. I think, too, there's a trusting environment that's been invested in over the years that means that a number of academics are on technology advisory panels and are familiar with technology roadmaps in companies, and companies are on industrial advisory boards of universities, and that's very important, too. We've seen Anne's Wordles. I think they're helpful, but it's very interesting that actually the same companies appear time and time again, depending upon, irrespective of which of the main panels you were looking at in the ref arena. And I suppose if I've got a concern in that area, there are some shiny examples that you refer to, be it Rolls-Royce, BP, Unilever, GSK, JLR, etc. But it remains a fact that the majority of the research income, the commercial research income, comes from a very small number of those companies. And I think that that's an issue for us. In terms of universities and the way that we look on the world, it's important, I think, to note at this particular point in time that the 1,000 or so spin-out companies that exist on our science parks have developed a fairly mature model. And we are seeing the pull through. We're seeing exits from those early stage companies. And that's, I think, moved us into a new space. Something that I don't think was played strongly, but also because it probably comes from the skills and the education agenda, is that 10 times as many graduate startups now exist on our campuses. So about 10,000 graduate startups are now there. Low barriers to entry, and who knows where they're going to go. So that's important. The other point I'd just like to make under people is skills deficit. And this also I want to use as a route into the whole area of international students. Taking just the Royal Academy of Engineering's report on engineering, we know that we've got to double the number of undergraduate and postgraduate students in an era when the demographics for the next decade are going against us. They can only come from outside these shores or from increasing diversity within these shores. Both are absolutely important. And I suppose in there, we are all concerned about the tightening of the Tier 4 visa restrictions and what that says and means to being trying to be a magnet for the best talent around the world, something that UK universities have been extremely effective as. Effective brokerage, especially to the SME community. If John Cridland was here this evening, he'd be championing the bit around economic growth and growing the Mittelstand. And yes, we bring this up time and time again, and I think this needs to be a focus for a real push, as you've already indicated. There's a bit about the where and the what. You've highlighted signposting. I suppose in the signposting, all of us exist in a space where regional, national, and international collaborations are important to greater or lesser degree. That was very much the case in my former role at Queen's University Belfast, where we were really a recruiter of global talent to turn to local advantage. That local advantage was very much expressed through a preeminent knowledge transfer partnership scheme that we provided that other universities wouldn't see as important. So there's a complex landscape out there, and we need to be very clear that we can't compartmentalize our universities or businesses too easily. I think the what is the really important part. So we've got something like 5 million SMEs out there. We've got perhaps 10,000 academics that might be able to link in. And I don't think we really yet know what the characteristics are of what certain groups of businesses need from universities and what universities can do. So I think we need to constrain that space and actually have a focused effort to try and address that very important point that you've reiterated. We've talked already about the industrial framework, so I won't want to say anything more than there, other than to say that actually your report is already having an impact, because in trying to address this interface between SMEs and universities, just yesterday, Praxis Unico, under initiative sponsored by Hefke, have announced a training program that they're aiming to start in London and move around the country about how to work with universities, aimed particularly at the SMEs. So already your report's having impact. Critical mass and stability and sustainability. I think they endorse your comments about the industrial framework, absolutely. It's the UK's industrial framework and innovation framework that we need to build on, not anybody else's. And I think we have some very interesting clusters developing, part physical, part virtual. And I'd probably pick out manufacturing as a good example, where we've seen research councils get behind centres of innovative manufacturing, innovate, take them on, the establishment of catapults in the area, and the sucking in of both corporates and SMEs around that. So there are some great examples. A point that I think that we should make is the very strong nature of the leverage into the research base in the UK. So again, picking on numbers from the Royal Academy of Engineering's report, £2 billion of government spend on research and development in universities, leverages 9.5 billion of commercial R&D spend from business. That's an extraordinary statistic. I'm also conscious that we need, and your report does, look at sectors well beyond engineering and the purely economic one. I'm always struck by the notion that this agenda and universities leverage 1.3 billion from medical charities. And from that 1.3 billion, it equates to 7.5 million donors a month linking with the science base in the UK. That must be one of the strongest outreaches to society from our science base that exists. You've mentioned technology transfer offices. I think there, I would want to say that I think you're really talking about the interface between business and universities. And I think we need to recognise that there is a disjuncture in many of our universities between technology transfer offices and research support offices and contract departments within the university. I don't think it's just at the technology transfer offices. They're often at the leading edge of trying to ensure that research from universities is drawn through for public benefit. But there is, I believe, something to be done inside universities, and I think that we often in universities underestimate the investment gap between the research ideas and innovation and product development. I think, too, there are challenges from industry. As you rightly say, IP policies have been there. There was the Lambert toolkit. Actually, business has found that difficult to use. They've been the underpinning of some of the big strategic partnerships, but they haven't been there as the resource to industry. And in the recent report by NCUB that you refer to, you know, universities' technology transfer offices have been promoting easy access IP, and yet we're not seeing businesses lock on to that. So there is a disjuncture which I would endorse there. In terms of visibility and consistency and innovation, I think you've said it all. It's about consistency of the environment. It's about the Haldane principle for innovation as well. Universities are very good at tailoring their hype spend, for example, for their environment. And I think it's very important that we don't try and overmanage that innovation cycle. We should absolutely celebrate people and the institutions that make up this framework, be it business, universities, and government. And an interesting statistic from a recent 2014 global review of university-based innovation ecosystems demonstrated that the UK had three of the top five. Congratulations to Cambridge, Imperial, and Oxford that come behind MIT and Stanford. I suspect that a decade ago it would be infeasible to think that those university-based ecosystems would have developed like that. So endorsing from a university perspective and your work and your approach to government, I think I would highlight consistency of the UK innovation framework as being very important, streamlining where broken and not overmanaged. I would argue, of course, for sustained funding and ensuring that that continues to be well leveraged by universities and by business. And I think that that's a real strength here in the UK. I think that we need a concerted effort to make progress on the M's. I think it needs to be integrating research and our education mission together. Thank you very much indeed.